This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
So you've just had the Wellington launch of the series. How did that go?
It was amazing. It was a sold out, full house. We had a great Q&A afterwards. Al's cracked the best jokes I've heard yet. I think there's still a little bit more room in that comedy routine.
Yeah, mate.
And my best oldest girlfriend from Whanganui drove here for 3 hours, and it was amazing to see her. And we had lots of parents bringing their children, which was really important. Yeah.
What is the reaction from the audience?
I don't know. It was very different from Auckland. I don't know. I mean, it was quite intimate this time. I think that just changed the vibe, but there's a older sort of audience in there, but yeah, kids as well. I think everyone liked it, and everyone stayed for the Q&A, so that was a good, good thing. Yeah.
So what is the difference between here and the Auckland audience?
I think just Auckland's a little bit more rowdy.
Auckland was drunk. Auckland, there was at night, there was a bar beforehand,
yeah,
people had a few drinks.
It was champagne, so that's the answer. Rowdy and way more people, obviously.
What do you reckon, Craig? What was the main difference?
I think Wellington cried more. Auckland laughed more, Wellington cried more. Mm. So we got two different emotional responses. Got the laughter from the rowdy bunch in Auckland and the tears from the more intimate crew in Wellington. It was a good audience.
I spoke to a couple of audience members just coming out now, and one of them was just really choked up and didn't actually have the words to say anything in the Q&A, but really wanted to pass on their thanks for the movie.
Ah, that's awesome. I mean, that's a beautiful thing to hear, how much we've moved people. And I can imagine that the ones, people that are moved the most, probably don't want to come up and talk to us.
I got a real sense that it just seems so authentic, the characters, the setting, the script.
That came about through our collaborator, friend, and part of our team, Cole Myers. And Cole is the writer, along with Oliver Page, and also co-producer on it. And Cole is an incredible trans activist and really brought with him his personal experiences and also, I guess, what he's always wanted to see on screen, which has always been denied to some extent. So it was about creating something truly authentic by the trans community, for the trans community and others, but just really with a clear focus on authentic representation, and Cole really spearheaded that by bringing his voice to the table.
And one of the biggest impacts on authenticity in the performances is casting transgender people in trans roles. I think Al's talks about that in terms of relating to the character, and I certainly see that coming through in some of the more hard-hitting, poignant, moving parts of Al's performance. But we hear from gender-diverse people, there's lots of little touches. Like, you and I were talking about that line. What does Kaz say when Anahita asks him about singing?
Just that, Kaz doesn't sing anymore because it feels weird for him. And that's in that line. Apparently that came from me. I used to be a singer, and, starting hormone therapy really changed that for me. And it is weird to sing now. So that was kind of my little bit of, added thing in there.
Those little touches, come from having a trans person writing the show and having trans actors embodying these characters. And there's always dialogue about how does this feel? Would you say it this way? And, we have the opportunity of all these heads of department who are trans feeding into the show. So that authenticity that you're noticing comes from having gender diverse people in all the creative departments of the show.
So, Elms, how did you relate to Kaz?
We're both trans, so that was the main thing. Like I say all the time, that was like a foundation for me, already set. And then on top of that, we're from, small communities. We're both Māori. We share so many similarities. It's just, I don't know, I just get it. It's hard to explain, really. It's just something you get.
I was also really interested in the kind of spaciousness of the production, that you're actually giving the characters time to reflect and think about where they are and where they've come from. Can you talk about kind of building that kind of spaciousness into the film?
Yeah, so that spaciousness starts with a script, and Cole and I worked a lot on actually stripping out dialogue and kind of interrogating what's between the lines. And then, you know, through rehearsals, when the actors are preparing, you know, they're all thinking about what's behind the lines, and certainly a stylistic choice as director is allowing space, you know, for what's inside the characters to play on their faces. And I think that's also an editorial decision as well. You know, the Rurangi does have a slower pace in most parts, and you know that's because so much of what's important to this drama is what's going on inside the characters. We need space to see that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's really hard to follow a script that's bulked with dialogue. It just kind of takes away from that authentic feeling or that realness. It's, you know what I mean? Like, yes, you
like
get
a
to play
a lot. Guy, right?
Yeah, someone asked me, like, they're like, oh, you must like forget your lines. Like, I said to him, I don't even really have that many lines now that I'm thinking about it. And he's like, oh, true. I'm like, yeah, like, I don't really say much. Yeah.
That's a great answer to the question, though. Like, you don't say much, and yet you convey so much, you know, in your face and what's going on for you.
You're feeling what's going on inside. That's.
That's one of the big things I took away from it as well, is that I think a lot of these characters don't seem that comfortable talking. You know, it's like New Zealanders aren't good at speaking very in sentences. And the way that you convey emotion and build character, not through dialogue, but through how you look, you know, the mannerisms.
I mean, Jem probably of all the characters embodies that clumsiness the most, and in terms of, you know, he stutters and he ums and ahs and kind of swallows some of his words. And that's just, you know, again, having a fantastic actor like Arlo Green. It was a quality that he started experimenting with in the auditions. You know, Cole and I kind of looked at that and then went back to the script and kind of shaped it a little bit more so he could bring that into the character. And, you know, I just think, you know, it creates such an affectionate portrayal of a rural man who's kind of cast into this really unusual situation of, you know, being in love with someone who has changed and yet remained the same.
So Jim and Kaz have a really multi-layered relationship. How did you work with the other actor on that?
Yeah, me and Max spoke about this earlier, and I think it's because both Arlo and I are just super passionate about acting, and you know, we put a lot of thought into our backstories. I mean, I don't know what was going on for him, but that's what it was for me. Because in rehearsal, we didn't. And Max, that was your decision to kind of keep that separateness between us. You know, in rehearsal, because that's what happens in the story. Kaz and Jim don't spend a lot of time together. And we spent more of rehearsal with, you know, as a trio with Anaheda. But I don't know. What do you think?
Also, something that I don't think I've ever told you, I don't know if you're even aware of it, was that Arlo and I built up an idea of, you know, who Kaz was before he left, and a relationship with that person, and a lot of memories with that person. And so I think, you know, I wanted to make sure that as much as possible, when Kaz kind of re-entered Jem's life, that there was this both shock and recognition. And just like you said, if I'd started rehearsing you two together, some of that shyness or awkwardness, you know, we would have lost. It would have happened in the rehearsal room instead of on camera. So that was sort of the idea there, was, you know, that seeing each other for the first time. And, you know, you played it really well, like when Jem arrives at the city council and you see, you know, basically your ex-lover, right? And I love the expression in your face, and you just jet out of there. And I think, you know, if we had started to dig into that too much in rehearsals, that would have been lost to time and wouldn't have happened in front of the camera.
There are a number of scenes that are really highly emotional, and I'm thinking particularly when the mayor is confronting you, and I'm wondering, how was it to play that? I mean, it was emotional to watch, but how was it to play it? And I'm guessing you did a number of takes. I mean, that would have been quite stressful,
Yeah, we did a lot of takes. I don't know. For me, that scene wasn't the most emotional for me. Like, in particular, it was kind of easy. I think because Max was like, you know, Kaz has heard these things before. I mean, he's been through it all. So, you know, initially he gets kind of upset, but then he brings himself back down because as an activist, that's what he's done, you know, his whole, in the last 10 years. So, but then, you know, you did some tricky things in there where you got Miss Richter to, you know, yeah, to say some things that were off the page to really get in there and hit me, which that worked. But yeah, there was, yeah, we did a heaps of takes of it, but yeah.
Yeah, I think for Al's and sort of for Kaz, it was actually, so we're talking about the dead naming, yeah, that moment. And I don't know, Craig, do you, like, I remember Cole being, you know, that was a really, it was really important to Cole how the production handled that.
Yeah, I mean, well, we want to avoid dead naming at all. So that meant stripping it from the script as well. So it's a dead name. It doesn't exist in the script, doesn't exist in any previous drafts. So through shooting it, it was that same approach where we were using words like, when she's supposed to be saying his name, she's going, dead name, dead name, dead name. And some other words which Max threw in to maybe evoke more of a response from Els in a, you know, in a safe way. But a little bit, that might come a little bit shocking. Not expecting it to come from Renee's mouth. Renee Leon plays Richter and does an amazing job at it. So yeah, and that kind of thinking was approached throughout the entire production, really. And it's just making sure that whatever's on the page, whatever the talent are reading, is safe for them, safe for filming, with trigger warnings if they exist and are required. Yeah, it was just part of the co-pop of the show, really.
Cole's really media savvy. He does a lot of media consultation, and one of his concerns was that if we put things in the show, like photos of Kaz when he was a child or dead named him, then the media, when they did their coverage and reporting on the show, just has a habit on like honing in on these, you know, dead names or, you know, who someone was before their transition. And it was really important to Cole that, you know, he's seen this done wrong so many times, so that when the show was out there, these things didn't even exist for the media to get their hands on. In fact, there's one photo, I think, of Kaz, you know, on the wall when he was a child. And again, the same, much in the way that we handled the dead naming, there was a lot of care around making sure that was always out of focus and barely seen. And yeah, I'm really pleased with the way that the production embodied the same principles that were on screen.
We actually printed that photo out of focus, so it could never have been in focus, which was a little sneaky way around that one.
That's why it was out of focus at the time. I just thought that Johannes was making sure that he had the camera out of focus, but that's even smarter, Craig.
So how has the media responded to this production?
Alice and I sometimes talk about the curly questions that you get asked. I mean, on the whole, the response has been enormously positive and a real palpable sense of excitement. And, you know, it feels like people are kind of picking up what we're putting down. I do notice that Els has kind of been pushed forward, as a spokesperson. You know, the media tends to treat him as like a spokesperson for all transgender concerns and issues. Maybe you want to speak a little, I don't know, has that been your experience?
Yeah, definitely. it's inevitable, kind of. You know, and like, just as I said in Q&A, I mean, I'm not representing anyone else but myself, and like, I just so want people to know that we're all so different. I mean, every human being is different. We come from different backgrounds. We have different parents. Some don't have parents. You know, there's so many different things. Those curly questions, like, for me, I mean, I'm really open to those questions. It's an opportunity for me to teach, or, you know, but, you know, that's not to say that you can just go ahead and ask people those questions. You kind of got to vibe, you got to feel what the vibe is between you and that person, and, you know, take care around that. there's still people out there who are really fascinated by the transitions of transgender people. And look, in all honesty, it's fascinating to me, but we don't need to continue. You know what I mean? It's you don't have to continue talking about it. I mean, let's look at all the things that we are outside of being, you know, outside of transitions. Let's look at what we do for jobs and, you know, the cool people we have in our lives and the people we fall in love with. And, I mean, there's so much more to us. I mean, we're talented, you know, so, yeah, I think, yeah, but we'll get there.
It's interesting when, you know, over the last couple of weeks we've done a lot of media, and when you actually line them up back to back, you know, we've made this show, these stories, these characters, you know, which, like Al says, is about you know, a son returning home to reunite with his father with his difficult relationship, you know, this debate in rural New Zealand over phosphates, you know, colonialism, and a character sort of coming to terms with, you know, their Māori heritage and wanting to speak to Te Reo Māori. You know, that's what's in the show, and yet we have noticed when you kind of back-to-back the media, there's this real focus on, you know, the transitioning and, you know, the transgender lens. And, you know, that is obviously part of the show, but it's been interesting for me to notice, like, how much that tends to dominate the kind of line of questioning from the media.
Still, yeah. Yeah, no, I agree.
Just looking on the website for the production, it seems more than just a movie. You've got internships, you've got a whole page around gender diversity within cast and crew, and you've also got what you will improve upon if you get funding for a second series. Can you talk to me about some of those things?
I think what's been really important from us from the start, and actually this is why we named our production company when we formed it, Autonomouse, for knee on the end, like a little mouse. But the idea is that we wanted to build up the community's autonomy in their storytelling. We wanted them to be able to tell their own stories, and that's ultimately the goal. So as part of that, we ran an internship program which was supported by the New Zealand Film Commission for six gender diverse interns through the production in all the creative roles. So we had interns in directing, producing, wardrobe makeup, editing, camera and art, so across the board, and trying to provide experience and get training, you know, with top people from the industry. I mean, that was part of it, you know, and so it's about creating the future generation of trans filmmakers who will be able to tell their stories themselves, which is where we ultimately want to get to. And that, you know, that's spread across all the way into cast as well. You know, phenomenal number of cast, we're gender diverse. So yeah, hopefully we'll get to season two some of the trans people we had working on this show, or the gender diverse people working on season one, will be in much higher positions, and it'll just keep going from there. That's ultimately where we want to get to.
We were talking earlier about some of the emotional high points in the series, and I mentioned the one about you and the mayor, but that wasn't the one for you. Which was the highest kind of emotional point for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it was... there's heaps, but the one that just comes to mind is when Kaz sees his best friend Anahita for the first time. Like, I just think it comes down to the depth of their relationship, like friendship. I mean, there's so much love for each other. And I think, you know, he's wanting acceptance from his father as well, but I just felt like Kaz really wanted his best friend back. And I think Anahita is his safe place, basically. I think, I don't know what that's about. Got me thinking now, but yeah, I think that was really emotional for me. Yeah.
That's an example of that thing where you hardly have any lines, right? And yet we see you kind of like run the length of the Amazon, you know, in that moment. What's going on? There's like this joy of being reunited. There's all this like sadness at like the 10 years that you've lost. And yeah, that's my favorite scene too.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah.
Craig, what about you? Is there a scene that you get emotional? We've never had this conversation. Like, is there a moment or a scene that gets you?
The end always gets me. It always gets shivers at the end, right down the spine. Like, I've seen it how many times now? 10, 20 times at least. Still, there's always shivers down the spine in that last scene.
There were a number of other pieces of dialogue that really stuck out to me. One was when I think Fina asks, who benefits from our shame? Who do you think does benefit from our shame?
I mean, I think in general, like, the people that benefit from shame are those who are in control of what's perceived as normal. You know, the people that most benefit from maintaining inequality. You know, shame keeps people down. Shame keeps people quiet. You know, shame keeps people away from, like, their power. And so, yeah, the people that benefit from shame, and I think this is what Cole is wanting us to think about, are oppressors.
Another piece of dialogue that really jumped out to me was when your father says, why did you fucking come back? Why did you come back?
Yeah, well, like, again, we were talking about this before, Max and I. I think we put it down to sometimes, I mean, as humans, when we've got so much going on in our minds and in our hearts, we make these decisions to do these decisions that we wouldn't normally make, but we don't really know why we're doing it. And I think for Kaz, it was just that home is a place of healing. I have that for myself. It's just when home calls, it's time to go, and you don't always know why, but it's just this special place, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. There's so many layers to that for Kaz. What do you reckon, Max?
I think you nailed it when you said home is a place of healing. Yeah. And, you know, I know that you go home to Hokianga sometimes and come back feeling like you have perspective and that you sort of understand something that maybe you didn't understand when you were heading there. And you put it perfectly. I mean, we often say that rurangi, in a word, is about healing. And, yeah, yeah, couldn't have put it better else.
Yeah, and I think you just, yeah, for me, it's a matter, it's about taking yourself away from the environment that you're normally in. And that environment's confusing for you. So, yeah, getting out of that and, yeah, having a new surroundings where you can self-reflect and figure stuff out. Yeah, that's a home thing for me. That.
Watching the series just seems to me a wonderful world of possibility and opportunity. It feels like a real, just an opening, a starting. Where is Rurangi going after this?
Well, we have big things on the horizon for Rurangi. And you'll be hearing about them soon. Ultimately, though, we would love to make a second season. You know, we've been storylining and planning with Cole and thinking about where that can go. And that world, as you rightly point out, is so beautifully set up. We have all these wonderful little narratives going on and little journeys of our characters. And characters that, you know, will hopefully join them on that journey. So we've kind of set the foundations. Now we want to show the world.
And just finally, what has the most touching comment been to you about the series so far?
Recently, there's been a number of parents that have gotten in contact, and I've become more aware of, you know, the enormous hope and joy and pride and fear that can come with being the parent of a gender diverse child. And there's, so, you know, since our world premiere, it's only been a couple of days ago, but yeah, parents have been like beating a path to our door, you know, just to connect, often to find out, you know, whether it's appropriate for an 8-year-old or a 13-year-old. And I think just in those conversations, there's been some really beautiful comments, especially coming out. I mean, I think, you know, one parent who was here in particular was, you know, I could see was crying. And yeah, so in some ways, the most touching comment has been no words at all.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I've just been getting all different comments, and that's been pretty cool. I mean, I said in the beginning, I want people to take what they need from it, personal to them, and that's how it's been. So it's been a good, I've learned from other people based on their reactions. Like, everyone's just got a different reaction, something new to say. And I think that's really cool. And it's all important. And yeah, I don't know. it's all, I don't know how to...
Actually, I just remembered there was a review that came out in the Pantograph Punch, and when I read it, I just sat in my car and cried because it was from someone who was gender diverse and Māori. And, you know, in some ways, the elephant in the room for this show is that, you know, as a director, I'm cisgendered, I'm not trans. And so it's been a real, it's really been on my mind, and I guess it's been a big fear for me in terms of just wanting to make sure that in terms of Cole's voice and the community of people surrounding the Rurangi, that they recognize themselves and these characters and these stories. And it's always, I've always been battling of, you know, whether I can tell this story or, you know, do it justice in a way. And when I read that review, yeah, the floodgates opened and I was crying because the reviewer had seen themselves so deeply and profoundly in Rurangi as a Māori gender diverse person. And that was actually an enormous relief to me. And from that day on, you know, I felt I could sort of walk a little taller when it came time to promote and talk about Rurangi. Yeah.